I shall always, Bez Hashem, cherish these words of the Philadelphia Rosh Yeshiva. And even though I know that I'm not worthy of so much of what you said, at least I also know that there's a standard to aspire to. And Bez Hashem, I shall try. There's another way of looking at this, and I think we should begin with a Dvar Torah. And I've selected a Dvar Torah, which to me at least has something to say about a guest of honor, this guest of honor. It's at the end of Shvius, and the Mishnah is talking about Hashmotas Kesofim, that the Shemitah year cancels certain debts. And it says, Hamachzechayv b'Shvius, if after the Shemitah year, after the seventh year, the Leiva, the person who borrowed the money, goes to the Malvin, says, that I would like to repay, Yemalei, the Malva, should say, Mishami to me, that according to Din Torah, Yechayv is canceled. Amalei, if the Leiva says, Afal Pikain, I still want to repay, Yikabel Mimenu, he should accept the repayment even after the Shemitah year, Shenemar, Bezeh Dvar Shemitah. And Chazal learned that there's only an obligation for the Malva to once say, Mishamitani, and afterwards he can accept. The Mishnah continues, Kayetze Boy, likewise, Reitzeach Shagola Liram Miklot, a murderer who was sent into Golis, into one of the cities of sanctuary. And since it was a Jewish city, surely there were organizations. And since there were organizations, there were dinners. And since there were dinners, there were guests of honor. So the Mishnah says, Reitzeach Shagola Liram Miklot, Baratsu. Yom Olahem, he should say that to them. Reitzeach ani, ich bin a murderer. What do I have to do with being a guest of honor? Amulai, afal pikein. If the people of the city say, we know who you are, we're basing ganz gut, but we still want you to be the guest of honor. Yikabel mehem, he should accept the honor. Shenema. Ladies and gentlemen, this is my speech. I don't know how you feel about after the speech. Some of you want to kill me. I would like to thank each and every one of you who have come in my behalf, family, friends, and colleagues in communal undertakings. All of you have my sincere gratitude. Each of you, through your friendship or through your association in the work that I've been privileged to do, has given me strength. I have always cherished your encouragement, and while I have not always been as appreciative in words as I should be, at the least this occasion gives me the opportunity to say how grateful I am to you. I'm especially grateful to all who are involved in the work of the Rabbi Jacob Joseph School, Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbonim, Menahelim, Balabatim. And that gratitude has to be expressed because, as the Philadelphia Rosh Yeshiva in fact said, if there is any reason why Torah Mesorah should pay tribute to me, it's because of my involvement in the work of the Rabbi Jacob Joseph School. And surely that work is a work of shutfus, of partnership, which with each and every one of you. And I am grateful, very, very grateful. And I also want to express my appreciation to what are now colleagues in Torah Mesorah, with whom I've worked on behalf of this dinner. Some have become friends. Rav Shia was a friend for a very long time, and certainly Rav David. And I look forward to the challenge of being a very junior partner and learning from you as to what needs to be done to strengthen Torah Moistus across the country. To my wife, Malka, there's more than gratitude, for she has provided the attention to family matters and the sense of obligation which may have been lacking as I have concentrated on klal activity. We share pride in our children, especially the older ones, Shani and Avi, because they have already shown a strong commitment to the ideal of community service, to working for the klal, and to helping those in need. And Be'ezus Hashem, they should continue in that way. About Torah Mesorah, is supported by this dinner. When Torah Mesorah was established 45 years ago, it was the expression of the remarkable partnership between the Torah leaders of the time, first Rav Mendelovitz Zatzal, and then the great Lakewood Rosh Yeshiva, and the very best of our lay people, who shared a vision of what needed to be done to create an environment for the growth of Torah Chinuch on this vast continent. That vision was Torah Chinuch itself, and it became the sacred vision of Torah U'Mesorah. It was not the role played by Rosh Yeshiva and other Torah leaders which made the partnership with Balabatim so remarkable. Rather, it was the active and creative involvement of lay people, individuals who by and large had little Torah education themselves, and who in an important sense lived in a world that was very different from the world of Rosh Yeshiva. The latter were Europeans whose lives were shaped by a total commitment to elevated Torah study and to the ideal of Torah Lishma. The lay people were Americans, or wanted to be Americans, and they were modern in their orientation, as the Rosh Yeshiva were old world in theirs. Perhaps the passage of time and the distance in which I view the lives and work of these outstanding lay people of the formative years of Torah Mesorah has resulted in my imagining things that weren't, in my exaggerating their achievement. But of this I am certain, there was a partnership, a shared mission, and the lay people were obedient to the Rosh Yeshivas and mindful of their subordinate place. In turn, the Rosh Yeshiva were respectful of the work and views of their lay colleagues. It is true, of course, that these Balabatim had a certain advantage which elevated them and enhanced their role in this partnership, in their transcendent association with Gedolei Torah. A single encounter with the great Lakewood Rosh Yeshiva could change a person's life. Just one spark from that living embodiment of Har Sinai could provide sufficient inspiration for all of one's days. I know that. Yet on their own, they were men of vision, commitment, and achievement, and they gave strength to the Rosh Yeshiva. How do we, the lay people of today, measure up to the standard of our predecessors? What have we done to further the partnership and the sacred mission of Torah U'Mesorah? It may be that close association with today's lay leaders has distorted my view in a different way, so I underestimate their achievement. After all, nearly all studied in yeshiva, and so many are B'nai Torah. All are obedient and dedicated. All are fully devoted to Torah Chinuch. But in the realm of Torah education, that is Torah U'Mesorah's, and that most important enterprise, which was the crucible which forged the partnership between Rosh Yeshiva and lay leaders, we have much to account for. At a time of vast and unprecedented affluence in our community, the majority of students in our yeshivas and day schools study in facilities which are woefully inadequate, which often do not meet minimal health and safety standards. At a time of vast and unprecedented affluence, nearly all of our schools are underfunded. Nearly all must skimp on maintenance, on supplies, on staff, on special services to children with special needs, and nearly all pay salaries which are inadequate. At a time of vast and unprecedented affluence, we do not have sufficient space to serve all of the students who want to study Torah. And that goes to the heart of the problem, the heart of what Torah Mesorah and the partnership are about. in the 1940s and 50s and into the 60s and 70s, just about every parent who desired a truly Jewish education could get his child into a suitable school. This is no longer true. Children are now being turned away, not in South Bend or San Diego or dozens of other cities where, because of Torah Masorah, that slogan is true, Torah Masorah from coast to coast, that is true. Because of Torah Masorah, there is a place for all who wish to study and grow in Torah. Children are being turned away in New York, not in Long Island or Staten Island, but in Borough Park and Flatbush, right in the heart of religious Jewish life. There is a shortage of space, of course, which is hardly an excuse. We have the resources to see that every child has space in a suitable yeshiva, and certainly we have the achrayus. But the way things are going now, choices have to be made as to which applicants are accepted and which aren't. Some aren't accepted because they are Russian. Others because they are Israeli. Some because their mothers do not cover their hair or because there's a television set in the house. When RJJ was established in Staten Island, the first Menahel, who was a Talmud of the great Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal of Chaim Berlin, and I went to see him. And we asked the Shaila about accepting children who aren't Shomer Shabbos. And the Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal turned to us and said angrily, but with warmth, "Das ist eine Shaila? Das ist eine Shaila? What would I have achieved on Stone Avenue?" Some of the outstanding Rosh Yeshiva in America come from the homes that you described. But today, children are being turned away because of their parents, if you will. Then there are those who can't get in because their parents are too poor or do not have the right connections. Students are also being turned away because their parents cannot or will not pay the asked-for tuition. Other applicants are rejected because they didn't excel previously in their studies or because they seem to be difficult students. I wonder whether those of us who are in chinuch know how much pain and harm our rejections can cause to students, and yes, to parents. We speak proudly and deservedly so of what we are doing to be Mekayer of Rechaikim. But what of our actions which are Merachei Kerovim? What of our actions which are Merachei Kerovim? I've held children in my hands, gone from yeshiva to yeshiva in Brooklyn, have them rejected. We are Merachei Kerovim today. I know that I am being somewhat unfair, that lay people are not responsible for much of this. But it's also a problem, because except for parents, by and large, lay people have become less involved in ordinary yeshiva education. The best are by and large involved with both the Midrashim and Kollelim. Every Kollel adds to the study of Torah, and therefore is welcome. And Kollelim are necessary, desperately so, in cities where the standard of Torah needs to be elevated. But what of the Chazal, Tioshim? Should we simply put it to rock music and dance at a chassid and send me Mim Yitzigven? That's a chazal, we believe in. And yet, the best of our balabatim by and large feel that it's beneath their dignity to become involved with ordinary yeshiva education. There's the example of the great Lake Rosh Yeshiva, taken to Slobodka as a boy of 12 or 13, nurtured by the Alta. He became the son-in-law of one of the Gedei Lador, Rav Yisrael Zalman Meltzer, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Rosh Yeshiva in Slutsk, and then in Kletsk, his own yeshiva. Students, Talmidim, came from throughout Europe to listen to his Torah. He was Meshamish to Chavetz Chaim. He learned that he spoke in Torah with the Ragachova. Rav Chaim Moiser held Gevaldik from him, and he was a colleague of Rav Chaim Moiser, as he was in Klal work with Rav Hanan. And he comes to America in the early years of the Churban, determined with one goal, to fulfill the prophetic words of Chaim Volozhiner. And he builds Torah in America. And how did he do it? By taking achrayus for ordinary yeshiva education, for day school education, for every single yeshiva katana, including those that were then co-educational. The great Rosh Yeshiva and other Rosh Yeshivas did not say that is beneath our dignity. I was sitting at a meeting of Torah Masorah the other day, and all of a sudden, listening to the Philadelphia Rosh Yeshiva Shlita, he said something which, if I think I heard right, was as follows. that in my experience as a member of the Vayar Chinuch, of the day school in Philadelphia, he was talking about it. So the Philadelphia Rosh Yeshiva, exhausted with so much responsibility for Klal Yisrael, he understands, the other Gedolei Torah understand, but most of we Balabatim, by and large, feel that a Yeshiva Katana, an ordinary Beis Yaakov, certainly a co-educational school, that's beneath our dignity. Surely we won't go on the boards. Surely we won't become active in them. This must change. We also need to demonstrate true Mesiras Nefesh. That's what Balabatim have to demonstrate. Mesiras Nefesh is a term which is used much and with little justification. It isn't Mesiras Nefesh to write a check or to go to a dinner or even to become a guest of honor. Mesiras Nefesh doesn't enter into the picture until exhaustion sets in, and then you begin the work of building Torah. Every one of us has seen Mesiras Nefesh in our outstanding Rosh Yeshiva. We see the exhaustion on their faces and in their bodies, and they go on. And we have seen Mesiras Nefesh, at least occasionally, from lay people. I've seen it in Avraham Fruchthandler. I've talked to him when he's exhausted. This person, the outstanding layperson, leader of our time. I've seen it in my colleague Yossi Stern, who has done so much to build up Yankiv Yosef. And I've seen it in a person, and this makes this entire ordeal, at least, if not for you, worthwhile. Because it is an example in Mesiras Nefesh that rises above every other example that I know of, and even though I'm prejudiced about it, I shall speak about it. It's an example of a person whose work is exhausting, who comes home for weeks on end in the early hours of the morning, and exhaustedly he took responsibility for a girl's yeshiva, which at that time was in trouble, and he made it into a much better and greater institution. The school was Shalamis, then only an elementary school. That person was my brother Arthur, a caterer. Who demonstrated that you can come home 2-3 in the morning, again, week and week in and week out, and you can still then begin the work, exhaustedly, of building Torah. And that's what more of us have to do. But there's something else which is needed. And that's really the message which I want to leave you with. And that is, there must be a restoration of the partnership between Rosh Yeshiva and Balabatim, between Rosh Yeshiva and lay people. It may be impertinent for me to say so, and if I am impertinent, I really want the material of everyone here. But what we need most from our Rosh Yeshiva, we bother them so much. They are so full of chesed, more than we need them in our simchas, and more than we need them to serve as social workers, in a sense, to our children and to our families. More than we need their countless acts of chesed, we need them to lead. We need them to do what Rav Shia said just before he used the word in terms of the staff of Torah Mesorah, that they are the shluchim. They are the messengers. We need the Rosh Yeshiva for that. They have to use the Balabatim in that fashion. They have to forge a partnership by telling us, we are the subordinate junior partners. We can't be impertinent to say what should be done. They have to tell us what to be done. They have to give us tough orders. A school there, a Beis Yaakov here. So much more could be done, but the Rosh Yeshivas have to order us. There are 6 million Jews in this country, the greatest settlement in numbers of Jews around the globe, and one of the greatest in the history of the Jewish people. There's so much challenge and so much opportunity, and so much Torah leadership is needed. And that leadership requires this partnership. And if I can say so, I learned this in what is the most difficult parsha of my life. It's been difficult, especially now, for 26 years. As a young boy of 17, I met the great Rosh Yeshiva through work in Torah in Chinuch Atzmai. And for 11 years, I tried to serve as the shliach of the Rosh Yeshiva. The Chazal, we learn in Gemara in so many instances where a shliach does not perform perfectly, and I was a very imperfect shliach. But at least there was a sense of mission, and at least I tried. And only twice did the Rosh Yeshiva have to say to me that there were things I shouldn't do. It was shimush, it was learning. And the hundreds and hundreds of times at the great Rosh Yeshiva, not once did I relax, not once did I not tremble. That went on for 11 years. The Rosh Yeshiva was to be my Masada Kedushin. And he took ill, and he passed away approximately 2 weeks after I was married. The last time I spoke to the Rosh Yeshiva was shortly before my chasana, when I asked him for a bracha. And I was crying, and he gave me a bracha, and nervously I turned away, and the Rebbetzin went after me and said that the Rosh Yeshiva wanted to add something. And he said to me that you must promise me that you will continue to work for Klal Yisrael, that that's what you will do with your life. And I think I promised. I was crying. And nearly 20 years later, the last time in Lakewood that I spoke to Rav Shneur Zatzal, which was a day before he went to Boston for the last time. And he had trouble breathing, and I got up to leave. And Rav Shneur said to me that there's some things that he had to say to me. And I believe we had never spoken about what his father had told me. I went out, walked, came back an hour later. And there were two things which Rav Shneur said to me, one of which I shall simply leave to my family, but the other was virtually word for word what his father had said, that I must make that promise. And I did. And about 10 days later or 2 weeks later, I was sitting in the Beis Medrash of Lakewood at the Levaya Reb Shneur. And I heard a speech, a hesped from the Philadelphia Rosh Yeshiva Shlita, which made everything very clear to me. It was a very great hesped, very moving, but it moved the intellect more than it moved the emotions, and it moved the emotions greatly. Philadelphia Rosh Yeshiva repeatedly said that Reb Shneur could now go and say "Osisi shluchosecha" to his father, "I fulfilled your shlichus." And sitting there that day, the words of Rav Aaron or Reb Shneur became very clear to me. Very clear to me. They at least gave me a mission to do. And as imperfect, and I am very imperfect as I am, at least that enabled me to be very junior in the partnership. What our Balabatim need, what my children need, what the people who are coming up through the ranks need, particularly because they are affluent in so many cases, and they've made it so quickly, is that they have the same sense of directed mission. They have the same sense of being a shliach. And so, what I plead to all over here is for the Balabatim, don't neglect that which people who are far greater than us have decided is not deserving of neglect, but is deserving of attention. Torah Mesorah and ordinary yeshiva education, from day schools to yeshiva katanas to Beis Yaakovs, they need to be strengthened. There needs to be many more of them. And to the Rosh Yeshivas, I ask that you really recognize that we are capable of far greater things. Lead us, and we will be obedient. Thank you.
Thank you. I would be remiss if I didn't speak in just a short response to Dr. Schick. I really feel that his speech was very moving and something unusual that we heard here tonight. I call upon myself and all of us assembled here to try, if we can, in this next period of time, to be attentive to the message that he gave us. He gave us a message that came down from the historical figures within our Jewish people. And it's up to us to carry forward in a strong way what he said. This is our opportunity, and Dr. Schick will try to do our best in Tarmasara.